these plans only narrow the gap of achieving 1.5 degrees by 15%. Even the best case scenarios where all these countries actually fully implement their pledges were projected to end up with warming of 2.4 degrees by the end of the century anyway, which is already well beyond the 1.5 degree.
Hi, I'm Tess.
And I'm Jana.
We're part of the podcast team at Klima Action Malaysia, and you are listening to Alama, a podcast dedicated to talking about the climate emergency in Malaysia. We're part of KAMI's ongoing efforts to raise awareness and create conversations surrounding climate change.
Klima Action Malaysia, better known as KAMI, is a grassroots climate organisation led by Malaysian youth based on the principles of climate justice. KAMI facilitates diverse civil society groups in understanding climate impacts to mobilise the declaration of climate emergency in Malaysia.
In today's episode, we're going to focus on COP26, what it is, its outcomes and how it's relevant to our country. We also discuss the recent floods that devastated the Klang Valley.
So what is COP26? COP stands for Conferences of Parties. Parties here being the governments that have signed to this convention called UNFCCC. This conference happens every year and the goal of it is to bring everybody, all the governments together to discuss on how best we can tackle climate change. Last year was actually the 26th time this has happened, hence it's called COP26. The conferences are attended by all the world leaders that signed to this UNFCCC, the ministers, negotiators, and also representatives from civil society groups, businesses, international organizations, and the media. COP26 happened from 31st of October to 12th November in Glasgow. For the first few weeks that it went on, COP26 dominated the news, so we are here to give you a breakdown of what actually went down during those large conference rooms.
So let's get started. What exactly is COP26's aim? Now, we've mentioned the Paris Agreement. It's an international treaty in our episodes already. The Paris Agreement was signed during COP21 and aims to keep the rise in global average temperatures to below 1.5 degrees. However, according to the IPCC report that was released just a few weeks before COP26, we're already at 1.1 degrees above pre-industrial levels. Keeping to below 1.5 degrees requires extraordinary measures of climate action. For each degree increment, ecosystems are destroyed, communities are exposed to climate disasters, and biodiversity is lost. So COP26 was a critical summit for climate action to keep that 1.5 degree aim alive.
Okay, so what actually came out of COP26? First of all, there was a lot of pledges and promises. 2030 became this magical year for countries to reduce global emission by half. And 120 countries have submitted new or updated plans to reduce emissions. And this sort of falls under mitigation of climate change. But these plans only narrow the gap of achieving 1.5 degrees by 15%. Even the best case scenarios where all these countries actually fully implement their pledges were projected to end up with warming of 2.4 degrees by the end of the century anyway, which is already well beyond the 1.5 degree aim. So secondly, there was a lot of discussions on adaptation of climate change. 10 years ago, developed nations agreed to fund $100 billion a year to developing nations starting from 2020 to help those countries manage their climate change impacts. While the exact data will be available next year, countries like the US promised to double their funding for climate action. But it's important to acknowledge that this $100 billion promise has actually been broken, being pushed to 2023, since there's no legally binding agreement to push developed nations like US to actually deliver those funds. There have also been further talks on financing loss and damages. Loss and damage is defined by the impacts of climate crisis that's simply just too destructive. So for example, low-lying areas that were destroyed in floods and storm, like we've seen in like Taman Sri Muda this year.
Now, Jana, I'm going to stop you for a bit. Let's talk about Taman Sri Muda and what exactly happened. If you could just give us like a, you know, blowdown on what went on.
That was really like really crazy few weeks, because I was on Twitter all the time and everybody was super upset about it, and I couldn't imagine the amount of people that was impacted by it.
Yeah, exactly. So like you, I was on Twitter as well, and just seeing the news come in, it was very, very disturbing. Now, the floods started in Taman Sri Muda, Klang Valley, and what happened was that the water levels kept rising, but due to inaction and slow response, people were stranded. I think there were images and tweets coming out of Taman Sri Buddha and areas around it, if I'm not mistaken.
I was really glad to see a lot of people on social media mobilizing, raising funds and helping each other out through multiple ways. That was really nice of Malaysians ourselves.
Yeah, I do think that Malaysians are very nice people. And so this mobilization and this raising funds was not surprising. But what was surprising was how slow the response was from the government. And as a result, I think, I don't know if you saw the count, but I think 50 people died.
That many casualties. I didn't know that there was actually 50 people that, you know, passed because of the flood. That actually just shows how intense the floods was. It hasn't been years like this, right?
Yeah, it is actually one of the worst floods that we've seen. And when we talk about, you know, adaptation and how countries need to manage climate change impacts, or we talk about loss and damage, I think the loss and damage that came out of these floods are huge. Loss of lives and damage to properties, etc., etc. So does that mean that, you know, can we then say that when we go to COP26 and we talk about loss and damage, this is exactly what we're talking about? This is what the impacts of loss and damage look like.
Is this because of climate change, though, or is it just part of another of our monsoon season?
So now, whether or not recent floods were due to climate change, Professor Fredelin says that it's not as straightforward. It requires further detailed studies. But here's the thing, right? The rainfall that happened, we can categorize it as an extreme weather, because the amount of rainfall that happened in a day is the kind of rainfall that we see in a month. So we can say that all this rain that was happening is extreme weather. And we know that extreme weather is because of climate change. So even if no one is willing to, you know, outright say that these floods were caused by climate change, I think it is very probable to like just see the linkage and see that climate change will result in all these floods. It will result in loss of lives. And, you know, something has to be done. So, Jana, on your question whether or not climate change and this heavy rainfall and this flood are interconnected, it's difficult to say. Now, there's scientists, for example, Professor Fredelin, that says it's not as straightforward of a matter and it requires further studies. But for me, I think that we can make the connection because climate change results in extreme weather. And the floods that we saw, where we saw enough, you know, rainfall for a month, that is an instance of extreme weather. So we know that there are linkages that link climate change to extreme weather circumstances. And that extreme weather then results in floods. It results in people losing their houses, people losing their lives. So it is a very serious thing. And I think that, you know, something needs to be done about it. So we know that GDI Malaysia, with the support of 77 MPs, have come up with recommendations, and they've demanded that the government step up. They acknowledge this blunder that took away the lives of so many people, and they take steps to ensure that this doesn't happen again.
So Tess, can you maybe explain to me a little bit about the Glasgow Climate Pact?
Yes. So what we want is we want to see what came out of this, right? And one of the biggest thing that came out of COP26 is the Glasgow Climate Pact. So after 2 weeks of negotiations, 200 countries have agreed to adopt this pact. Now, it's an agreement that acknowledges that the current plans are simply not ambitious enough. Now, I think you talked about how even if we implement fully, we are only at 15% of reaching our targets. So yeah, they're not ambitious enough. So to solve this, the pact asks the government to come back next year with stronger targets. Now, this might sound like a disappointment, like every year we just come back with new targets, but actually, the original plan has been to ask governments to come back after 5 years. So this is good. We're asking them to come back after a year, and we've asked them to come back with stronger pacts. Now, the pact also touches on issues like adaptation, climate financing, loss and damage, etc. We talked about this for a bit. Now, the Glasgow climate change was one of the key outcomes that came out of COP26, but there were also a bunch of side deals that were going on. United States and EU spearheaded a global methane cutting initiatives in which 100 countries have promised to reduce methane emissions by 30% from 2022 levels by 2030. The US and China, the world's two biggest carbon emitters, have also announced a joint declaration to cooperate on climate change measures. So it does look like a lot of deals went down. But let's talk about what Malaysia has pledged, Jana.
All right, so Malaysia delegation at COP26 was led by our Minister of Environment and Water himself, YB Tuan Ibrahim Tuan Man. Malaysia has committed to take bold actions to tackle climate change by pledging to reduce carbon emission intensity by 45% by 2030. Malaysia has also endorsed the Glasgow Leaders Declaration on Forest and Land Use, which champions halting and reversing deforestation, as well as global methane pledge, setting a collective goal to reduce our global methane emission by 30% before 2030.
One of our team members was lucky enough to get support from Fridays for Future to get to COP. We had a chance to access the blue zone of COP26, where most of the negotiations happen. Hayley was an observer there. Let's hear from her.
I think overall the vibe at COP was very stressful and overwhelming. Like, it was very anxiety inducing, especially for me, because I didn't know anyone there, and a lot of the youth activists that I've heard about them and I know about their work, and a lot of them are very inspirational to me, but I've never directly had contact with them. So it was I was very nervous to meet them and also like work together with them in terms of planning for actions within the blue zone. Yeah, and it was just like very overwhelming because there were so many people there. And I wasn't expecting the amount of press and media that were present there. Since youth activists, we do a lot of action within the blue zone as well as outside the blue zone. There were a lot of like media and press that were constantly pushing at activists and trying to get a reaction out of activists. And it was very stressful and annoying. Being my first time like being publicly, you know, interviewed and stuff like that, I was very, very nervous. And on one of the days where we had action to call out the US and Obama for the $100 billion that they promised for reparations for loss and damages, I actually had a panic attack because of the amount of press and media that were surrounding us activists. And it was just very, very like anxiety inducing and like very overwhelming, because these media people would keep pushing and pushing and trying to get a reaction out of activists and making us look like, you know, we are like very demanding. But essentially that's the point, right? We should be demanding for climate justice. So some of the things that I did there were, you know, organize, be part of the organizing team on youth actions, as well as joining the march. So one of the biggest marches that I've ever joined was the Global Day of Action rally. And it was honestly one of the best experiences in my life because of the amount of support that everyone had for each other. So it was very interesting because it was so well organized that you wouldn't expect it to be, you know, mostly led by youth activists. But I felt very safe despite being part of the like most affected people and areas group. So during the march, I was within the bubble for MAPPA, just for our protection and safety, because we are like part of the most vulnerable communities in the world that are being oppressed and essentially being the target for climate injustice, right? So that was really interesting. In terms of access to all negotiations, as an observer, I didn't really have that access. It was even joining the conferences and like those live stream like sessions was quite difficult because of the pandemic. They had like a limited number of seats for people to enter the plenary halls and conference room. So you had to be early or you had to know someone that was in there to save a seat for you, or else like you wouldn't really be able to enter. I managed to enter one of the negotiations meeting that were discussing Article 8 And it was very interesting and also very disappointing, because the things that I heard during that negotiations session was a lot about, you know, removing the human rights aspect in the Paris Agreement and in terms of the COP26 agreement, right? So I didn't expect it to be so disappointing, but at the same time it was very interesting for me to be part of that discussion and to see how people in power actually discuss about things that actually do matter and the process behind it. I did meet some, no, actually I only met one Malaysian delegate from the Malaysian Youth Malaysian Youth Delegation. And it was quite brief because she was there as a reporter as well. So she was interviewing me about the Weaving Hopes exhibition. Besides that, I didn't really meet any other Malaysian delegates. I wish I did, because it would have been interesting to like discuss, you know, Malaysia's position and policies relating to COP26. So some of the tips that I would give a person who is going to the next COP is to try to mentally and emotionally prepare yourself. I know it's like better, like easier said than done, but essentially I think like that's that, like having a support system behind that is really behind you is really, really important, because the amount of stress that I felt at COP was just very overbearing, and I didn't expect it to get so emotional, like talking about climate action and climate justice. It's, you know, you think that like at a climate conference, you'd be given the platform to like talk about your experiences and, you know, actually create change with your voice and the people's power. But a lot of times I felt very silenced. I felt very like powerless, and I felt tokenized because they just wanted to speak to an Asian representative or someone who's part of Asia, someone who is part of MAPA. But it wasn't really focused on our struggles as a community, as well as the true climate crisis that is happening in our countries and communities. So I think really be prepared that, you know, you're going to be silenced and you're going to be used for media just to show that, you know, there's diversity within the conferences, within the discussion that's happening. But also, you know, another tip that I would give is to do as much research as possible, because a lot of times I felt very lost within like the discussions, not just within like the conference itself or the negotiations, but also within the activist groups, because we're all coming from different communities and countries. So it's important for us to be well versed about what's happening around the world so that we could get involved in the discussions.
So that was it. That was the 101 on COP26. Now, decisions at COP26 will decide the decisions in our country. So this includes the implementation towards floods or other extreme weather events, mitigation and adaptation. The Paris Agreement or whatever else that comes out of COP26 is not legally binding. However, it's still important to hold our countries accountable. KAMI stands firm with our demand. We call for a special commission to investigate the disaster and the efficacy of the response actions. The special commissions must consist of independent scientists, affected communities, experts on flood issues, health professionals, and NGOs. The government must also acknowledge the climate crisis and expedite the development of a robust national adaptation plan. So before we end this episode, to our listeners out there, we just want to remind you, I think there was somebody that was saying it online, Jana. I don't know if you saw it. It was something along the lines of how Rakyat Malaysia, as the Rakyat, we forget very easily. Mm. And I think the time has come that we do not forget as easily anymore.
Yeah, so I think it's also important for us to hold our MPs accountable and our ministers accountable, because as we've seen from recent news, it's climate change is not a small matter and impacts lives and impacts people's livelihoods. Yeah.
Exactly. I agree with you. Now, 50 people have lost their lives. And I think we need that. We need to keep reminding ourselves of that figure. That's not a small number. And, you know, the people in the government have to be responsible for it. They have to listen to the demands and they have to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, so that's it from us for this episode. So if you like it, share it to your friends.
Thank you so much for listening to us.
Bye.